good afternoon, Namibia. You are tuned into another edition of On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and for the next 1 hour and a half, I'll be keeping you informed, engaged, and connected to the stories shaping our nation and the world. Welcome to On the Radar. Today, Tuesday, the 21st of October, 2025, we're deep into the final stretch of the year, and as the week rolls by, Namibia's social, economic, and political conversations are getting more interesting. Now, if you've been looking for a space that dives deep into social, economic, and community news, this is it. On the Radar News Analysis is your weekday guide to what matters most, airing every Monday to Friday from 1300 hours to 1430. And remember, your voice matters. You can join in on the conversation anytime by dialing on 083-288-401 or by sharing your views on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or via WhatsApp. Also, make sure that you do tune in via the Eagle FM app or the Eagle FM website. Now, whether it's a comment, a question, or perspective, your voice defines the dialogue. Now, this isn't just about headlines on the reading news analysis. It's about deep dialogue and understanding. We ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots through expert insight, archived audio, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to the realities on the ground, we bring you the full picture. And speaking of stories that shape our nation, let's start in Nepal, where the Minister of International Relations and Trade, that is Sama Shipala-Musavi, met with the Kunena business community as part of ongoing ministerial regional business engagements under the African Continental Free Trade Area. Stay tuned. We'll unpack what those engagements mean for Namibia's broader participation in the AFCFTI and how local industries can prepare for regional trade opportunities right here on the Radar News Analysis when Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump straight into today's top stories. The Minister of International Relations and Trade, that is Sama Shipala-Musavi, met with the business community in Nepal Kunene region on Monday, 20th October, as part of the ongoing ministerial regional business engagement aimed at advancing Namibia's integration into the African Continental Free Trade Area. Now, the engagement held in collaboration with the Ministry of Industrialization, Mines and Energy brought together government representatives, traditional authorities, and local entrepreneurs to assess Kunene's economic potential and identify key areas for trade and investment growth. Minister Shipala-Musavi reaffirmed the ministry's commitment to ensuring that local businesses reach their full potential. She highlighted Kunene's unique economic assets and called for greater participation of women in the mining sector, drawing inspiration from other African countries where women-led mining ventures are thriving. She further emphasized the importance of expanding the small stock industry, noting that goat farming could generate stronger returns for Kunene households if developed sustainably. The minister also encouraged innovation in cultural entrepreneurship, pointing to the transformation of the Nuke men's attire, that is a traditional hide, reimagining as modern fashion, as an example of how heritage can drive the creative economy. Minister Shipala-Musavi also underscored the growing potential of indigenous cosmetics as an emerging economic sector, urging local producers of natural skincare products to position themselves for participation in regional and continental trade. She stressed that sustained economic progress requires collaboration between government, traditional leaders, and the private sector, encouraging the people of Kunene to share concrete ideas, organize and innovate so the ministry can support bankable initiatives. Let's now take a listen to the minister herself.
Honorable Asino, I want you to convey to our governor first that I congratulate him for his well-deserved appointment as the governor of this great region. I listened to his State of the Region address, and I was very impressed by his vision. And please assure him that the Ministry of International Relations is ready to work with him in order to materialize his vision for this region. And this is what our President, Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, wants us to do as Namibians, that it is business unusual, and also to assure you that this is just the beginning of our interaction. This morning, we are here in partnership also with the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, and also supported by NAMRA, as it was mentioned. And I'm pointing that out in order to explain the division of work between the two ministries, so that you know where to direct your queries in order not to waste time. Her Excellency the President, in her wisdom, has created a Ministry of International Relations and Trade, which I am heading. Very good. He has already explained my responsibility in terms of international trade, and my team is to create market access for Namibian products and services. Now, in order for us to create market access, to sell our meat or whatever, it means somebody else in Namibia must produce. And that's why we now have the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, which means in terms of manufacturing, in terms of internal commerce, in terms of registration of companies, anything that is happening in the country in terms of production is, and SMEs as well, is under the Ministry of Industries. And this is why we work together. That's why everywhere we go, there is always a representative of the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, because we work together. In terms of our purpose here this morning, I think it has been already referred to. We know what Kunene region is known for. But you, the residents of Kunene region, knows this region better than anybody else. So it's to hear from you to say, Honorable Minister, in addition to what you know about Kunene region, these are other sectors that we want the government to look at. This is what we are prepared to do, because we want to look at what are the lowest hanging fruits in Kunene region. And I know there are many, because I also know this region. I come here a lot. Because the responsibility of my ministry is also to bring investors into the country. So we now want to know, when we leave from here, if we get investor A or investor B, we know that this one we are taking to Kunene. Because this is what the people of Kunene said they need. Yes, this region is known for mining. In fact, it's becoming a mining hub. But how many of you are also engaged in mining? Who is doing the mining here? What opportunities are there for you at your level in the mining sector? What little assistance do you need? What do you need from investors who are coming here in the sector of mining for you to also benefit from this sector? In other African countries, because we learn from each other, we see that more and more women are getting into the mining sector. They are forming association of small miners. Is there such a possibility in Kunene region? And what is it that we need to do? Then we have tourism, which is also another mainstay of this region. What else can we do in tourism? What other opportunities are there in tourism? Then you have small stock. Everybody comes here to get their goats, to get their sheep. What else can we do in that sector in terms of regional and local value chains? Then has been emphatic about creative industries by way of empowering the youth. What are the opportunities here in Kunene region? I'm looking at my brother here, very clad, you know, in Namibian stylistic attire. What can we do with that? Can we market that?
Yeah,
maybe you want to wake up to get up, honorable, and so then they can see what I'm talking about. In any region, you also have an advantage in cosmetics. Munoshide. Oshideuri. And we are going to talk about that in the closed session because we need to also keep some of our information to ourselves. So we are really here, government working together with the private sector because we need one another to say, how do we transform Kunene region? How do we create economic growth by using the local content, the local resources and opportunities in Kunene region by optimizing them further in order to create jobs and empowering everybody. It is only us Namibians who can develop Namibia. Anyone who comes here.
Let's pause now here and make room for a scheduled commercial break.
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get a 2 kg bag of nice rice for just $34.99. 750ml Quality Select Cooking Oil for just $29.99. 100ml Aquafresh Toothpaste for just $16.99. And 1 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder, now only $29.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Honorable Asino, I want you to convey to our government, but you, the residents of Kunene region, then we have tourism, which is also another mainstay of this region. What else can we do in tourism? What other opportunities are there in tourism? Then you have small stock. Everybody comes here to get their goats, to get their sheep. What else can we do in that sector in terms of regional and local value chains? Then has been emphatic about creative industries by way of empowering the youth. What are the opportunities here in Kunene region? I'm looking at my brother here, very clad, you know, in Namibian stylistic attire. What can we do with that? Can we market that?
Yeah.
Maybe honorable, you want to wake up to get up, honorable, and so then they can see what I'm talking about. In any region, you also have an advantage in cosmetics. Munoshide. Oshideuri. And we are going to talk about that in the closed session because we need to also keep some of our information to ourselves. So we are really here, government working together with the private sector because we need one another to say, how do we transform Kunene region? How do we create economic growth by using the local content, the local resources and opportunities in Kunene region by optimizing them further in order to create jobs and empowering everybody. It is only us Namibians who can develop Namibia. Anyone who comes here will only complement.
And now let's take a listen to Asa Nashikaku. He is the Acting Deputy Executive Director in the Ministry of Trade and Executive Director, Trade and Investment. He will now provide an overview on the ACFTA.
The African countries of a membership of 55 countries started to negotiate the African Continental Free Trade Agreement This is quite an important decision that was actually taken by the forefathers, that Africa, we should be able to trade with each other. This emanated from the question that why is Africa not trading with each other? We've been trading with the third world, Europe, the Americans, the Asian, and then we forgot to trade with each other. Our trade was only limited. It was only about 12 to 15%. Now, this agreement have then been negotiated. It have now entered into force. And that's why we are here, in order to inform all the regions about the African Continental Free Trade Area, so that all of us can be able then to take advantage of this agreement. Now, Namibia, through the Honorable Minister of International Relations and Trade, launched trade under the FCFTA. In other words, launched Namibia's trade under the FCFTA on 30 June 2025. That will now provide an opportunity for all Namibians to prepare and export their products. Now, for Namibia, in fact, this particular agreement allow us to cover the most important areas, such as goods and services. But there are also areas, but for now, we can then export our goods, but we can also export our services. And for the Kunene region, I think tourism export is important, and other related services sector that is actually happening in the Kunene region. The agreement also make provision for doctors, nurses, and retail services to go out, so that we are able then to expand our services, and not only to be able then to look inwards, but also to be able then to look outwards. Even education services, you can actually also expand and market those particular services in all the countries in Africa. And lastly, in order for Namibia to take advantage of the African Continental Free Trade Area, Namibia have then developed, the ministry have then developed what we call the AFCFTA implementation strategy. And that strategy have then identified the number of products that Namibia is producing, and they have also identified the demand. Where is this particular product demanded? In Africa. We have also established a committee that will help to identify Namibian products for export. But also the committee, they will be able to look at what are the available products, what is needed for us to be able to upgrade these particular products, to package it accordingly, for it to be able to be accessible into the African market. Therefore, we are calling from the region to identify people, one or two people, to be able also to assist, to be part of this particular committee, and forward this particular name to the ministry, so that we can...
And now let's hear from Pinias Jonas Nyala, from the Ministry of Mines and Energy, also providing an overview of what it means for business people in Opuwo Kunene to be able to partake in the AFCTA.
We are going to discuss investors in a better way. Again, we have got a program called Industrial Upgrading and Modernization Program called IUMP. This is mainly a program through which we provide the grants to business people to be able to source machines to expand their production facilities, and also to be able to improve technology in their production of goods and services. All of these programs have to do with supporting big manufacturing unities, which we call big industries. Beyond that, we also have micro, small, and medium enterprise policy and programs through which we also support MSMEs. Before I move to the SME policy and programs, maybe let me pause and explain a little bit more on special economic zones. The special economic zones is an incentive regime created to attract investors by both international investors and also local investors. Yeah, from these investors, we are expecting to benefit from economic growth. We are expecting to create more employment for our people, especially the youth. And we are also expecting these investors to transfer skills in terms of employable skills, in terms of technical skills, to be able to equip our people with capacities to be able to achieve high employment or be able to do businesses that require higher level of skills. Yeah, we are also expecting them to support our small businesses through local content, which means if a factory creates a mine is operating in this region, they should be able to source other services and support activities from our local people to be able to create business linkages. Yeah, we are also expecting these investors to be do business in a more environmental friendly manner. So they should
still on that which Pinias is talking about the special economic zones, which are designated economic and industrial areas with special regulatory and physical incentives. Namibia is expected to benefit in terms of being able to attract foreign and domestic investment for economic growth and also to descend employment creation, skill transfer or development transfer, as well as to benefit on local content and business linkages, and also to benefit by green industries as they help carbon free and also helps in terms of environmental protection. Meanwhile, for incentives for investors, their benefits are such as corporate tax rate, which is 20% for SEZ investors. Also, they receive customer duties, which is 50% prescribed, and VAT exemptions on certain approved goods, accelerate depreciation and capital allowance, as well as they also help to contribute to green industry support. Let's further take a listen to Opinions.
Investors in a better way. Again, we have got a program called country in a way that we do not damage, in a way that we don't damage our ability to save our people and also to save the future generations. And for these investors, also we are offering them a corporate tax reduced. We are offering them custom duties reduced. Negotiable. We are also offering at some point VAT exemptions and also accelerated depreciations. Thank you. And regarding SME policy and the programs, I am going to run through those that are displayed on the screen. And the first one is equipment aid scheme, which is a grant program. We have budgeted resources, and through these resources, we are able to support small businesses with grants that mainly is for those that are in need of equipment for use in their production, in their enterprises. Yeah, I want to make it clear, it is not a grant money in cash. You identify the machine you want, and we buy for you that machine, and we give it to you. Another program we have is called Gemstone Cutting and Polishing. This is mainly a training program that train young people and women in polishing and cutting of gemstones. This takes place in Karibib. We are also having another center in Kitimanswap that we are preparing to start with. And this is mainly to make sure that we equip you with the skills on how to classify minerals that are gemstones on how to polish and cut them in a way that you shape them to place them in jewelries, for example. The next one is value chain development in the SME sector, which is mainly an organized approach towards supporting SMEs in specific sectors, including jewelry making, including Ochide processing, for example, and we also cover garment manufacturing with this value chain development approach, and we are also supporting them with equipment and machineries. We have also another program that's called Imbretec Namibia. Imbretec Namibia is a program that is anchored on entrepreneurship. We provide through this program quite a list of training programs that supports entrepreneurs from bookkeeping, business management, sourcing, marketing, and all of these activities that we think they are very key to develop business management skills in the SME area. The Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy also have deployed regional offices in each and every one of regional capital of our country. So you don't have to go to Windhoek to access all of these services, but here in your capital region, capital city of your region, you are able to go to our office and inquire on any of our programs. The officials in these offices, they are also participating in your regional economic planning activities through RDCCs. They also do a stakeholder engagement. They share information with you on all of these activities. I'm sure most of you, this is not the first time you hear about these activities. They also assist to support you through a lot of other services that you need as a business person. For example, if you have to register your business, you can do it through them in their offices. You can also apply for export or import permit through our regional offices. I'm done now. And you can also apply the manufacturing status certificate through their offices. All of these are services that our regional offices provide, and you don't have to go to Windhoek. In the context of this Africa Free Continental Trade Area, we should be able to support these activities also through our regional offices. And I am given a red card. I just have to conclude. Maybe by conclusion, I should just state that yes, we are providing all of these activities, but we are still facing a challenge of resources. In the process, we are still asking for more resources to be able to cover more people and to be able to be impactful on the ground.
There you heard it from Pinias Jonas from Ministry of Mines and Energy. Now we're going to take a listen to Alexia Oveka from the Namibia Revenue Agency, also known as NAMRA. She's going to talk about also the registration requirements for exporters under the Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
That determine whether the goods being traded between state parties, in this case the parties of the ANCFTA, meet all the requirements to be certified as of Namibian origin or vice versa. And why are the rules of origin important? It's for your product that is certified as of Namibian origin to enjoy tariff preference in the exporting country. So what I mean by tariff preference, I mean reduced tariffs or eliminated tariffs depending on the product. For example, if you were to trade in fish, if you have to trade in fish with China, for instance, where we do not have a trade agreement, that fish will cost you 25% on duties. Whereas when you trade this fish within the ASCFT market, it will cost you zero or lower. It depends on what is agreed on a certain product. But in this case, I'm just illustrating fish. If you were to trade with China, it will cost you 25%. But if you were to trade it with Nigeria or any other African countries, it will cost you zero rates of duties. And how do we determine whether these goods are originating in Namibia? We use two criteria. One is wholly obtained, and the other one is substantial transformation. Let me talk to wholly obtained. For example, you want to sell your meat to Ethiopia, and that meat cannot be from a cattle you got from Angola. It has to be a meat from the cattle from this region, born and raised here. It's when that meat will join that tariff preference I referred to earlier. That is wholly obtained. Our grapes we get from Austin Care, and our fish caught by our vessels. That is wholly obtained in our territory, so that you can enjoy tariff preference. And the other criteria is substantial transformation, meaning a product can be produced from partly from goods obtained from Namibia and from other goods from other African countries. For instance, if you want to produce butter, we have the milk here, we have the water. What else do we need what we don't have here that we can get from our neighboring African countries? Because we are party to this agreement now. Now we can get those goods at lower duties or reduced duties. Then we can produce our product, which we can in return also trade into the bigger African market. That is what we call substantial transformation. Okay? Now when your product is tested and it meets all the origin requirements, all prospective exporters need to contact our office. NAMRA office is the one responsible for registration of exporters under trade agreements. So we will come. You come to our office. We will issue you with the application form. If necessary, we will go to your site to verify whether the goods are indeed of Namibian origin by showing us the manufacturing processes or the papers proving that these goods are of Namibian origin. And then when that is done and your products tick that box, meaning you qualify, your product qualify or it doesn't qualify. But let's talk about the positive note. It does qualify. And then we'll write a letter we'll issue you with a letter proving that you are registered with NAMRA for this particular product. For instance, if you want to export a butter, you can only come to us for registration of butter to export under the EFCFTA. And then you can get a certificate of origin at the point of exit. But you cannot add in any other product which is not registered with us. If you are registered for butter, then you cannot add fish or any other thing. Then it is not supposed to go like that. So that those are the requirements. Okay, what we need are the documents required for your registration is your brief company profile, just to tell us who you are and what you stand for as a company. We will need a permit for those products, depending on the products. When you want to export, for instance, live animals, of course you will need an export permit from agriculture. And then you need, when you are exporting fish, you need the proof of right holding, meaning that must come from a Ministry of Fisheries, that you have quotas or you have a vessel. Or we also need a proof of identity and a certificate of good standing with NAMRA. You must be in good standing with NAMRA in order for us to register you as an exporter under AFCFTA. When all those requirements are met, ladies and gentlemen, then you are an exporter to the AFCFTA market, and customs at the point of exit will issue you with a certificate of origin for the AFCFTA, which looks like that. So that is only for the AFCFTA. We have other agreements, but this particular certificate of origin is for the AFCFTA so that your product can enjoy tariff preference. Without this certificate,
mm-hmm. There you had it from Alexia Oveka from the Namibia Revenue Agency, also speaking on what requirements exporters are required to submit particular documents in order for them to qualify with NAMRA. One of those is the company registration certificate, the brief company profile, export permit where it is applicable, a proof of right standing, also where it's applicable, proof of identity, certificate of good standing with NAMRA, producer supplier declaration, also where it's applicable, manufacturing and processing. And then with those requirements being in place, then the registration, with this registration requirements for exporters being in place, then they will be qualified to export under the AFCFTA. And now with that being said, let's also take a listen from NIPDB, that is Rono Muranda, who is the responsible for stakeholder relations at the Namibia Investment Promotion Board. You'll also speak to us about other focus areas that NIPDB focuses on. Take a listen.
So what is the mandate of the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board? There are two mandates. One is investment promotion and development, as well as facilitation. And then the second one is MSME, which stands for Micro, Small and Medium Enterprises Development. Now, investments are done in three phases. First is to attract, second is to bolster, and then the third is to connect. Then the activities are to promote, to facilitate, and also to have policy advocacy. So activities typically would be investment attraction events and conferences, marketing, awareness creation, business to business meetings, business to government meetings, and targeted promotional missions. So we identify, package, and showcase investor-ready projects and connecting projects to institutional investors.
Twatwapo obiungulwa nobihepwa obiumbihepwa na ingo kuchita kokuja imbambehepo biungulisi wambo wechu yevechivisiwe obiungulwa biwina.
So in a layman's language, what is it that we do?
Ya nambano kusetulula kokucha etetubu ya minaove obikena bitungura hapa.
So facilitation means projects that are in our pipeline that we've been engaging with already. We provide a one-stop center where we are providing comprehensive services, where we have various government agencies on one floor, when we provide a one-stop service for investors. The one-stop center, for instance, would have agents from the NAMRA, Ministry of Home Affairs. We would have somebody from BIPA. We would have somebody from NITA, somebody from the Competition Commission. The idea is that we need to provide a comprehensive one-stop service to investors.
Tetunotupa otungi tohoromende notuhinga kohoromende oto nambano tutubiungulo yungula peke peke pakatiko juhani.
We also provide what we call aftercare visits, where we visit our investors, just trying to understand the type of bottlenecks they are having, the challenges they are having, and how we can assist to resolve those type of challenges they have, for them to be able to concentrate on what they do best, and that is to produce, to make profit, and to employ people. In the interest of time, we are also looking at the reason why we go out and look for investors, like Honorable Minister has indicated, is the reason why we want to bring in investors is to create jobs, import substitution, infrastructure development, local supply chain development, where this is now where the MSMEs and SMEs can plug in. How can they be part of this supply chain? And regional development. Our priority sectors are energy, which is now renewable, green hydrogen, and oil and gas. In alignment with what the minister earlier on said, creative industries is there, tourism and sport is there.
Ovariange, gawi nawi no manyando, ovariange no manyando, sport.
Mining and adjacent industries are there. Of course, others are transport and logistics, services and others. But of course, what we mentioned as the five key that we can consider for the region is also among the priority sectors for economic diversification from our side. For MSMEs, for small-scale businesses, what are we looking at? Our focus is to provide access for them, to be information for access to financing, information sharing and business development. For those that are already in operation, to try and scale them up. Those that are thinking about it, to start up. Market access and export promotions, amongst other things. Some of the projects we landed in the country, Benguela Blue Aqua Farming, it's in the Claras region, about 1 billion, and they've created about 600 permanent jobs and 1,000 seasonal jobs.
Blue Aqua?
Closer to this region, we have what we call the Pyronam, which is a Namibian biochar company just outside Ochivarango. They've already set up a pilot plant there. They are located near Ochivarango, and they produce things like what they call biochar, wood vinegar, and tar. And that is basically a project that has been set up just outside of Ochivarango. So if you want to be part of this database and become an investor, or you want to take advantage of the propositions for investment opportunities, you can visit our website that is stated there on the screen. And if you want to access our MSME services.
And with that, people see and make room for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back shortly.
You've leveled up in life, and now it's time to level up your contact. MTC is changing the game with our new contract data plans. More data, more voice minutes, and more SMSs. Core of everything you need. Plans start from just $199 per month. And for a limited new customer's score, an extra 10 gigabytes of data valid for 90 days, absolutely free. Don't wait. Visit any MTC mobile home or call 1-2-000 to level up today. MTC, make the connection.
The International University of Management, IUM, will be donating essential medical equipment to the state. The significant event will take place on Wednesday, the 22nd of October 2025, at the IUM Graduate School of Business, located at DRN Square in Windhoek. The ceremony will be broadcasted live on Eagle FM from 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning. Save the date and tune in to witness this important contribution to the health sector.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association will host its elective annual general meeting on Wednesday, the 5th of November 2025 at 17:30. Now, the meeting will be held virtually, allowing alumni to join from all corners of the world. All UNAM alumni are invited to be part of this important occasion as we reflect on their achievements, discuss key motions, and elect a new executive committee. AGM link will be shared closer to the date, and all reports will be available on the UNAM website. Don't miss this opportunity to connect and shape the alumni legacy. Now back to our news coverage. Namibia sets to benefit majorly under the African Continental Free Trade Area. That is, of course, SMEs can benefit significantly from integrating into the AFCFTA. Some of the benefits include they have access to a larger market. SMEs can tap into a market of 1.3 billion people and a combined gross domestic product of $3.4 trillion, increasing their customer base and revenue potential. Reduced tariffs and trade barriers, lower tariffs and simplified customs producers can reduce costs and make it easier for SMEs to export goods and services. Increased competitiveness, SMEs can improve their competitiveness by learning from other businesses and adapting to new market demands. Also, SMEs can diversify their trade by accessing new markets and reduce dependency on traditional markets. The African Continental Free Trade Area can attract foreign investment into Namibia, creating opportunities for small, medium enterprises or MSMEs to partner with international businesses. SMEs can create jobs and contribute to Namibia's economic growth by increasing productivity and competitiveness. Also, SMEs can benefit from improved logistics and transportation networks, reducing costs and improving delivery times. The African Continental Free Trade Area can provide opportunities for women and youth to participate in trade and entrepreneurship, promoting inclusive economic growth. Now, to fully benefit from the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, Namibia's SMEs need to invest in industrialization, education, research, and development in order to produce high-quality products and services. They also need to explore available funding options and develop financial products tailored for SMEs' needs. To also need to develop digital skills in order to leverage digital technologies and to improve efficiency in order to, for them to reach new markets and enhance competitiveness, streamline customs procedures, and also reduce bureaucratic red tape to ease trade. Also participate in policymaking by engaging with policymakers in order to shape trade policies and regulate that support SMEs' growth. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuala. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angetashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, egelefem, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for economic indicators and thereafter trading economics. $1 dollar today is equal to 17 Namibian dollars and 31 cents. €1 is equal to 20 Namibian dollars and 12 cents. £1 sterling is equal to 23 Namibian dollars and 15 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars and 24 cents. $1 Chinese yuan is equal to 2 Namibian dollars and 43 cents. $1 Swiss franc is equal to 21 Namibian dollars and 78 cents. $1 Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 30 cents. And now for trading economics. WTI crude oil futures rose to $57.5 US dollars per barrel on Tuesday, remaining not far from 4.5-year low of $56.31 US dollars hit in the previous session. Now, as investors weighed growing oversupply concerns ahead of US-China trade talks, data from Voltexa showed a record of 1.24 billion barrels of crude and a condensated moving on tankers worldwide, signaling a swelling glut as producers continue to pump despite weakening demand. The IEA warned that global oil markets could face a record surplus next year, with OPEC Plus and other producers adding supply over even as demand growth slows. Analysts expect US crude investors to have risen again last week, adding to bearish sentiment. Steel draws in gasoline and distillates provided some short-term support. Investors are watching upcoming trade negotiations between US and China. Belgium's industrial production rose modestly by 0.1% year-on-year in August 2025, following a downwardly revised 0.3% decline in July. Activity growth accelerated in the mining and quarrying sector, which climbed 3.5%, up from a 0.3% increase in the previous month. Manufacturing output also strengthened, rising 2.4% compared to 1.7% in July. Meanwhile, the electricity, gas, steam and air conditioning supply sector declined by 1.9%, matching the pace of the prior period. On a seasonally adjusted monthly basis, overall industrial production fell 0.4%, following a revised 1% increase in July. Greece's current account surplus widened to 1,097 million euros in August 2025 from 331 million euros in the same month last year, marking the largest surplus since January 2024. Now, the improvement was largely driven by a higher service surplus, which rose to 4.4 billion euros from 4.3 billion euros, supported by a 10.5% increase in tourism revenues at 4.52 billion euros versus 4.09 billion, while the goods deficit narrowed to 2.2 billion from 2.7 billion. The British pound fell to around 1.34 US, its lowest in a week, after data showed the UK government borrowed 7.2 billion euros, more than focused in the first half of the fiscal year, underscoring the tough fiscal challenge facing Chancellor Rachel Reeves ahead of the November 26 budget. Now, the budget deficit hit 99.8 billion euros, above the 92.6 billion projected by the OBR, as debt interest costs surged 66% to 9.7 billion euros in September, which is the highest for that month on record. The deterioration driven by high inflation, rising welfare costs and weak tax receipts raises fears that Reeves may need up to 35 billion euros in spending cuts or tax hikes in order to meet his fiscal rules. Economists warn that borrowing could reach 5% of gross domestic product this year, complicating fiscal plans and weighing on investor confidence. And with that being said, let's pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. To stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota enjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendike nawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore satu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device.
Welcome back for News Beyond the Borders. Now, starting off in South Africa, where the Media Development and Diversity Agency calls for protection of journalists against cyberbullying.
Reporters say they have witnessed journalists being degraded and suffering bullying on online platforms. Some of those who experienced the incidents say they had to take a break from reporting, but they did not throw in the towel. Senior reporter Kwanita Hunter says the experience was unbearable.
The tragedy of it is that we get abused to the point where many of us, including myself, got to a point where we rather leave the industry full time instead of combating it. And I realize that there's a deep problem with that. That essentially, if we don't fight back, and if we just leave, what's going to happen to the journalists that come after us? And so, the cyber harassment is the targeted, the gendered attacks, whether it's, being insulted, whether it's being, hurled insults against, body shaming, doxing, and a systemized, an attack on women journalists.
Those in management positions say social media platforms used to degrade and insult journalists should be held accountable because they allow information to perpetuate falsehoods. Gillian Green says heads should roll.
We've got to also hold the platforms to account who allow this disinformation to perpetuate without any repercussion, without any recourse or easy recourse to somebody who's been a victim.
The South African National Editors Forum's Katie Katopodi says female journalists suffer more.
The reality is that female journalists are far more targeted than their male counterparts in our industry. And we're targeted in really horrific ways. We're sexualized. We're often told that we can't be both mothers and wives and journalists at the same time. And you find the weaponization of a person's personal life that happens in the workspace. So it really is something that we need to tackle head on. And we need to say enough and no more.
The Media Development and Diversity Agency says policies that were meant to tackle issues faced by journalists, either on social media platforms or at work, are not effective enough.
Policies that are being created are not trickling down to those on the ground where they need the protections, whether it be from a regulatory side or more in-house media. We were particularly focused on what kind of protections are available within media houses for affected journalism. And I think the statistics were stark. More than 40% of journalists, women journalists, faced or indicated that they faced online harassment or online gender-based violence, and 7% indicated that their media houses have online particular online policies that addresses this. So we saw that there is an urgent need and demand for us to address it, as it is currently being neglected as something that is affecting the mental health of journalists, but more significantly contributing to the withdrawal of a critical journalist in the field.
According to the MTGA, 41% of journalists that experienced the abuse were harassed online. The agency says journalists face defamation, racial abuse, sexual harassment, and stalking online or in the area of work. Calvin Rutler, SAPC News, Johannesburg.
South Africa's Democratic Alliance, DA, pushes for structural economic reforms.
The DA has accused the ANC of introducing crude race-based policies. DA head of policy Matthew Cuthbert says the ANC continues to introduce red tape that cuts ordinary South Africans off economic activity.
Our Economic Inclusion Bill for All seeks to amend the Public Procurement Amendment Act of 2024 to repeal all race-based preferential procurement provisions and replace them with real empowerment system that targets poverty as a proxy for disadvantage instead of race. This bill aims to create a public procurement system that encourages genuine economic empowerment by offering incentives for tangible developmental outcomes such as job creation, poverty reduction, skills enhancement, and environmentally sustainable practices. We aim to reform South Africa's public procurement framework by aligning it with Section 217 of the Constitution, which governs public procurement. And this requires that all state organs must contract for goods and services in a system that is fair, in a system that is equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective. Our alternative model aligns with the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which serve as a universal call to action for government, business, and civil society to end poverty, address inequality, and create a pathway towards sustainable economic growth by 2030. The bill removes provisions for set-asides, pre-qualification criteria, subcontracting conditions, and local content designations, and replacing these measures with an outcomes-driven system centered on inclusive development and value-for-money procurement. Furthermore, the transitional measures in the bill include the winding down of the BEE Commission over 12 months and the systematic removal of references to BEE across legislation. To give effect to this change, the bill empowers the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition to develop a simplified preference point system based on suppliers' demonstrated contributions to inclusive development and social impact. The DA's alternative scorecard comprises three components. Firstly, value for money. Secondly, economic inclusion. And thirdly, disqualification criteria. The value for money component assesses cost effectiveness, technical capacity and the reliability of bidders, which accounts for 80%. The economic inclusion component assesses bidders' demonstrable contributions to the SDGs across five key categories, such as human development, economic empowerment, environmental sustainability, inclusive communities, and a mixed impact option, which accounts for 20%. The disqualification criteria excludes bidders if there is a proven record of fraud, corruption, or misrepresentation.
The DA's Economic Inclusion for All bill seeks to replace broad-based black economic empowerment whilst changing the public procurement measures currently in place.
Perhaps the most notorious example of this disastrous policy is the 54 billion rand locomotive procurement scandal, which was investigated by the Zondo Commission into state capture, which revealed just the extent of how political connections enable widespread corruption and looting. In this particular case, Transnet unlawfully inflated the price of a 2014 contract to procure 1,064 locomotives from 39 billion rand to 54 billion rand in order to favor Chinese suppliers and channel over 6 billion rand in kickbacks to Gupta-linked companies under the pretense of transformation. The BEE model has become a key driver of corruption within our society. We have witnessed this in the wide-scale looting of approximately 2 billion rand from Tembisa Hospital and the murder of Ekurhuleni Metropolitan Municipality's chief auditor, Mpumalo Mafole, after submitting a scathing report relating to 1.8 billion rand in chemical toilet tenders.
The DA's Economic Inclusion Bill quietly removes ownership, management control and equity participation, with the very pillars of BEE that attempt to shift structural power in the economy for those who are previously disadvantaged. Samkele Masego, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Renewable energy benefits 239,000 Zambian households.
Zambia's energy sector is undergoing a transformation to promote diversification. The Ministry of Energy is supporting small and medium enterprises in renewable energy sources such as solar and geothermal in a bid to increase access to clean energy. The ministry's initiatives include the 1000 Min Grid Initiative, whose aim is to accelerate rural electrification, and the Beyond the Grid Fund for Zambia, which has connected over 110,000 households, businesses, and institutions to clean energy.
We're also streamlining the regulated environment by reducing project approval times and clarifying process for developers. In light of this, we're proudly saying that for any investor who wants to invest in the energy sector now, it takes only a minimum of 48 hours for them to be granted their licenses that they're up and running.
Other stakeholders like the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, are also supporting government's effort by empowering SMEs with grants.
And so this project under the productive uses of electricity has facilitated grants to community-based organizations, one in Mongu called the Ndowana Farming Club with a grant of $20,000 and another grant has gone to the Pazesa Horticulture Farming Club who are promoting solar-powered interventions.
And various UNDP grant beneficiaries say the support has enabled them to boost production and income generation.
First, we were given $25,000. That was the feather project that we got. Now for the PU project, we received $20,000.
Productive use of solar energy has been supported by UNDP with a grant to the tune of $20,000. We secured this grant through a call for proposal.
The country's renewable energy sector is growing, and small and medium enterprises, SMEs, are poised to drive economic growth, create jobs, and increase access to clean energy. This turn is bringing hope on the horizon for Zambia's power outage. Nyambe Nalishebo, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Zambia demands activation of cholera task force.
Zambia, a country of breathtaking beauty and a frontline in Africa's fight against cholera, is hosting a World Health Organization WHO Regional Expert Consultation Cholera Prevention and Control in Africa meeting. The meeting, which has attracted the participation of health and WASH experts from 20 high-burden countries in Africa and key partners, has been officially opened by the Minister of Health, Permanent Secretary for Technical Services, Dr. Kenneth Lishimpi.
No single country can fight cholera in isolation. Cholera bacteria do not respect borders. This is why Zambia fully supports the establishment of a continental coordinating mechanism to harmonize policies, coordinate response, and ensure accountability. We also call for the operationalization of the Continental Cholera Task Force as endorsed by heads of state during the June 2025 Presidential Cholera Summit convened in Lusaka under President Hichilema's leadership.
Speaking at the same meeting, regional and global partners pledged continued support to make cholera elimination an African achievement.
The EXA-HC stands ready to work hand-in-hand with WHO, member states, and partners to turn our commitments into measurable progress. Together we can make cholera elimination not just a global aspiration, but an African achievement. As we deliberate over the next 3 days, let us be guided by science, solidarity, and a shared sense of responsibility.
We try to support as many countries as we can actively with in-country presence, but we're also available for ad hoc support for those developing national cholera plans, carrying out your POMI analysis, or planning technical pillar activities.
By mid-2025, more than 20 countries on the continent had recorded 140,000 cases with a case fatality rate of about 2%. And because behind every number is a life, Africa is taking action to eliminate cholera. Justin Akakulubelwa, ZNBC News, Livingston.
ZANU-PF paves way for Munangwanang 13, pardon me.
Until 2030.
Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF members at the recently concluded National People's Conference made a pronouncement expected to cause further tensions within the Liberation Party.
It is resolved that his term of office as President of the Republic of Zimbabwe be extended beyond 2028 to 2030. The party and government are therefore directed to initiate the requisite legislative amendments to give full effect to this resolution to ensure continuity, stability, and the sustained transformation of the nation. Noting that no notable steps have been taken to implement the above resolution, this conference hereby reaffirms this resolution and directs the Secretary for Legal Affairs and the Minister of Justice to ensure that before the 23rd National People's Conference, this resolution of the party is fully implemented.
Some within the rank and file of the party have quietly resisted the notion to extend Mnangagwa's prolonged stay in power. Now, they have been forced to openly defy the party's move.
Economic empowerment must be genuine. Equipping all our people with the means to produce, innovate our own innovate and own our own destiny. That is the essence of Vision 2030, and that is the essence of the revolutionary continuity. We must always remember that we are not the Alpha and Omega of Zimbabwe's journey. Ours is to carry forward the torch passed to us by those who gave everything without expectation of reward.
Mnangagwa has previously insisted that he is a constitutionalist and harbors no interest of clinging to power. However, he did not openly reject the resolution.
I wish to applaud the 22nd National People's Conference for engaging in discussions that were robust, candid, and factual, as well as forward-looking and inclusive. The resolutions of our meeting further demonstrate that we are a well-oiled machine, ready to leap forward our industrialization and modernization as we meet the growing needs of our people for a better quality of life.
The political observers believe this latest pronouncement is the clearest indication that Mnangagwa intends to rule beyond his constitutional limit and puts a dent in Chiwenga's bid to succeed Mnangagwa in 2028.
Experts say growth of China's innovative drugs market reflects its global reach.
Data shows China's domestically developed innovative drugs market has reached 100 billion yuan, or about $14 billion since 2021 under the current 14th five-year plan. The anti-PD-1 monoclonal antibody produced by Junshi Biosciences in Shanghai, used in cancer treatments, was the first innovative drug developed by a Chinese company to receive approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. However, the scientists in the company were once unclear on which tumor to target in clinical trials, as PD-1 can be used to treat different tumors, and conducting a phase 3 clinical trial was expensive.
In 2018,
we were listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, and in 2021, we went public on the Star Market. These listings have been crucial in raising capital for us, playing a key role in supporting our R&D and production efforts. National policies supporting the development of innovative drugs, like reforms in the review, have also provided substantial support.
Jin Shi's PD-1 has received approval in 40 countries and regions. Simcere, another leading company with experience in neuroscience and oncology, etc., has launched 10 different innovative products.
True innovation doesn't necessarily mean 100% new molecules. You don't focus on the molecule itself. The focus should be on patient value. And we have done actually a lot of our research through that path.
China's outbound licensing deals for innovative drugs reached nearly $66 billion in the first half of 2025.
We don't think of ourselves as simply selling products. We're thinking of ourselves as building the right platforms that can then create products that can be partnered outside of China. For example, we developed a T-cell engager platform, our ADC platform. All these things are established so that it can continuously provide products that can then be outlicensed abroad.
In July, China launched new measures covering drug research and development, clinical application, and cost payment, reflecting the central government's robust support for the industry. Chen Sun, CGTN, Shanghai.
Meanwhile, President Donald Trump has affirmed that the ceasefire in Gaza remains in place.
Donald Trump has affirmed that the ceasefire in Gaza is holding after an explosion of violence in the region over the weekend.
Israel carried out airstrikes across Gaza that killed dozens after accusing Hamas of carrying out an attack that killed two IDF soldiers, the first major test of the Fajr truce.
The leaders of the Palestinian armed group have denied any involvement on the Israeli soldiers.
Now both sides have recommitted to the ceasefire plan, which Washington has vowed to guarantee.
We want to make sure that it's going to be very peaceful with Hamas. And as you know, they've been quite rambunctious. They've been doing some shooting, and we think maybe the leadership isn't involved in that, you know, some rebels within. But either way, it's going to be handled properly. It's going to be handled toughly, but properly.
Is the ceasefire still in place?
Yes.
Let's take you back to the story that we began the hour with, U.S. President Donald Trump reaffirming that the ceasefire in Gaza remained in place after an explosion of violence in the region over the weekend. Israel carried out airstrikes across Gaza that killed dozens after accusing Hamas of carrying out an attack that killed two IDF soldiers, the first major test of the fragile truce. Now, Hamas leadership denied any involvement in the IDF attack, and both sides have recommitted to the ceasefire plan, which Washington has vowed to guarantee.
We want to make sure that it's going to be very peaceful with Hamas. And as you know, they've been quite rambunctious. They've been doing some shooting, and we think maybe the leadership isn't involved in that, you know, some rebels within, but either way, it's going to be handled properly. It's going to be handled toughly, but properly.
Is the ceasefire still in place?
Yes.
All right, let's stay with us and speak to SABC News correspondent Sherwin Bias Peace. Sherwin, good evening to you, and thank you so much for your time. The United States essentially acknowledging the fragility of the moment and also dispatching U.S. envoys to the region with Vice President J.D. Vance, also due in Israel tomorrow. What more do we know?
Well, Bongi, essentially, if you had any doubts as to whether this was a fragile truce, a fragile ceasefire, look no further than the events over this past weekend. An attack on Israeli forces in the south. Israel then, as you would expect, responding with airstrikes across Gaza. But there you heard President Trump reasserting that the truce was still holding. dispatching his Middle East envoys, including Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, that really were catalytic in getting that agreement across the finish line. You also, in your introduction, mentioned that the Vice President of the United States, J.D. Vance, will be landing in Israel tomorrow. And that really speaks to the urgency of the moment and the role that the United States is playing here in terms of guaranteeing this truce. Of course, there are still many things to be resolved in terms of the second phase of the ceasefire. You have seen all the living hostages released so far. There are still a number of hostages, deceased hostages, whose bodies are being recovered. A complicated task, given the levels of destruction that you know exist in Gaza. But these are some of the things that Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff are now discussing with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his team. We also understand that they will travel to Egypt, to Cairo later, for direct talks under the auspices of Egypt's mediation with Hamas to talk about the second phase. Part of that second phase has to do with a transitional authority that will govern Gaza in the absence of the Palestinian Authority perhaps taking over. These are some of the permutations that still need to be addressed. We also a short time ago heard from the UN in terms of developments over the weekend, access in terms of humanitarian aid entering the Strip. This is what the Secretary General spokesperson said moments ago.
Meanwhile, French President Nicolas Sarkozy goes to jail.
Hello, I'm Geeta Gurumuthi. Thanks for being with us. The former president of France, Nicolas Sarkozy, has arrived at La Santé prison in Paris, where he'll serve a 5-year sentence for conspiring to raise election funds from Libya. Mr. Sarkozy, who was the president of France between 2007 and 2012, left his home alongside his wife, Carla Bruni, and was seen waving at his supporters as he was driven to the prison. He's consistently denied wrongdoing and is appealing. The former head of state, who's 70, will be placed in the isolation section of the prison. Let's go live to our correspondent, Hugh Schofield, who's in Paris. We saw those images, Hugh, and President Sarkozy, former President Sarkozy, continues to protest his innocence.
Indeed he does. If you look back to the court case at the end of last month, you'll recall that it was a rather controversial decision by the judges in the sense that defenders of Sarkozy were extremely angered by it. The judges in that case cleared him of the three major charges, which were of conspiracy to corrupt and raising illegal funds. But they did convict him of the fourth count, which everyone thought was the lesser count, which was of criminal association. In other words, being part of a group, some of whom carried out a criminal act. It was never proven to the court, as far as his lawyers are concerned, that Sarkozy had actually known of this conspiracy to raise money, which failed. And therefore, they're very angry that there's such a harsh sentence and exemplary sentence was imposed on him. Of course, the other side of the equation, put by members of the judiciary and the left in general, is that, there was some kind of conspiracy. He was in charge, should have been in charge of his own camp. And if they approached the Libyans for money, he's partly responsible. But there was no doubt, though, that this is a very harsh and exemplary punishment that he's got, especially as there's no stay of execution of the sentence pending an appeal, which in many cases, most cases there would be, given that he's not in any way a threat or liable to abscond.
So what happens now? He will serve the full 5 years. Just tell us about the present. Tell us about the historic moment that this is as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a big, big moment. I mean, this is a former president of France who's a man very active still politically with his network, still regarded by many on the right as the last, once upon a time, the last chance of the right. The last time the right was united was behind Sarkozy, 10, 12 years ago. So a man who still counts. And here he is imprisoned in an 11-square meter cell in a wing near drugs dealers and convicted terrorists. I mean, for the whole of France, this is a shocking and quite unusual moment, whether you are for him or against. So, yes, he's gone in making quite clear he does not want to have any special favours done. He did not ask to be put in the isolation wing, but he was put there for his own safety by the prison authorities because they know that he would be a potential target for other inmates who would, you know, find pleasure in beating him up or whatever. And he's going to have the regular prison routine of one-hour exercise all by himself in a courtyard, a television in his room, a lavatory and a shower in his room, but not much else. And then he'll have to wait and see. I mean, there will be early an appeal to get him out by his lawyer. So it's most unlikely he will serve, you know, probably no more than a few months, but you know, he doesn't know that. And I would say he's gone in very much regarding this as an opportunity to win friends among the French public, because he's gone in with his head held high, holding his hands with his wife before she set off, saying he doesn't want any favours, and he's certainly behaving in a very dignified way, which I think will win a lot of support around the country.
And Hugh, I mean, he was a well-known figure on the global political stage, wasn't he? Both he and his wife. What is it possible to say what the wider reaction in the French public to this is?
Well, as I say, I mean, the country divides on Sarkozy. He's a very divisive character. Some people regard him as a phenomenon and a good man, essentially, who loves France, was committed to serving France, has his character flaws, because we all know that he's an incredibly ambitious person, an incredibly forceful person, a nervous person as well. So broadly on the right, they quite like him and what he did, even if they can see that there are certain personality issues. On the left, though, he's a figure of absolute loathing. And this is, you know, kind of at the heart of all of this, because his accusation and his supporters' accusation is that there is in the judiciary a body of opinion which is fundamentally opposed to him. And they think there's been a politicization of the judiciary, and that magistrates have just been out gunning for him for the last 15 years. The judiciary and people on the left would say, well, hang on a sec. You know, he's played fast and loose with the law in various aspects. So if they come after him, that he's only got himself to blame.
It's fascinating. Hugh Schofield in Paris, thank you very much indeed.
Meanwhile, a life-changing eye implant helps blind patients read again.
Now to some good news, because for the first time, blind patients have been able to read again thanks to a microchip implanted at the back of the eye. A surgeon at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London, who led the pioneering treatment, says the results are, quote, astounding. Our medical editor, Fergus Walsh, has been to meet Sheila, who says the treatment has changed her life.
Sheila Irwin began losing her sight more than 30 years ago and is registered blind. This is what her world looks like due to a condition called dry age-related macular degeneration, or AMD.
Is it left now? Yeah, it says now, isn't it? So, yeah.
But everything changes when Sheila, who's 70, puts on these special glasses.
They docked at Bine Tor.
She can read again.
Next day.
For the first time in years. So how is this possible? This tiny microchip, as thin as a human hair, was implanted under Sheila's retina. Here you can see it in position at the back of her eye.
For company.
A camera in the glasses sends a video feed via infrared beam to the chip, which is enhanced by computer. The images on the left are the camera output. Those on the right are what Sheila sees.
Tin of tar paint. Out of this world. Amazing. One happy bunny. I could have cried when I looked, because I haven't seen letters for so long, and then I lit up the word, and it was overwhelming.
It's really made a tangible difference to your life.
A big difference entirely, because I read the post, read books, do crosswords, Sudoku.
Did you ever imagine that you'd be able to read a book again?
Never. Never on your Nelly.
See, I'm just checking the macula. The chip's in an excellent position.
Moorfields Eye Hospital in London played a key role in the international trial. Of 32 blind patients given the implant, 27 were able to read again using their central vision.
This is the first treatment
that's been demonstrated to effectively give patients meaningful vision that they can use in their daily life, such as reading, writing. So I think this is a major advance. This is pioneering. And I think what you'll find with patients is that it is life-changing.
There we go, Sheila.
Thank you.
The technology is not yet licensed or available on the NHS, but offers hope to thousands of patients with Sheila's form of dry AMD.
I'm going to turn off the lights now.
Thank you.
Yep.
H-M.
It takes concentration, but she's now able to read every letter on an eye chart. Sheila's delight at the new technology is plain to see.
Very impressive. Very good.
Fergus Walsh, BBC News.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Ndingi program brought to you by Louise Shimi. And thereafter, the Home Run show with Dwight and Helmut comes your way from 16:30. Don't forget to tune in for Business Economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 hours. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. Enjoy the rest of your day.